Hey, fellow NDE fans, we have some exciting things coming up on the other side, but we could really use your help and support to keep going with this channel. Our outreach team works around the clock, making sure to bring you the best NDE stories that we can find. But now we're looking to expand into other countries to get near-death experiences from around the globe. However, we need your help and support to make this happen. This is why we're introducing our YouTube membership program. Get access to exclusive, ad-free episodes that haven't been on YouTube. Watch and participate in live Q&As with the guests. Engage directly with us and NDEers. Participate in giveaways and live events. And most importantly, you will ensure our channel's continuous efforts to seek out and uncover these important experiences worldwide. Support us by hitting the Join Now button below. Thank you for your continued viewership and support. Your help will make a difference, and we look forward to building our community together with you.
Hi, I'm Peter Anthony. I had a near-death experience in the late 80s. I remember the ambulance, the lights flashing back and forth, blue, red, blue, red, blue, red. When I arrived, I remember the paramedics were looking down at me. I could see stress on their face. I could see a time element, hurry in their facial expressions. When we got into the admitting room, in itself was a nightmare. I remember that during this time frame of my life, we were in the height of the AIDS epidemic. I had lost a lot of weight throughout the summer, was in the news division. And back during that period of time, I'm losing weight, had these brown lesions on my face, coughing. It just wasn't the best admitting time at that moment in my life to be accepted by the hospital. And I was turned away. A friend of mine had taken me there along with the paramedics and insisted that I be treated and mentioned that I was with the news division. So that kind of helped out. The admitting clerk finally admitted to checking me in. An intern suited up like I was sort of active and put me on a gurney. Here I am bleeding, not knowing that I had at the time a perforated viscous, not knowing at the time that I had tuberculosis, and not knowing that I had Crohn's disease. So as I am being wheeled towards the ER, I looked up and I remember reaching for the intern, and I was in excruciating pain. The lower left side of my body, my abdomen, was in excruciating pain. It was so unbearable. Anyway, I tried to speak to him, find out what was going on, and he looked at me with panic on his face. He was suited up. The only thing I could see was his eyes and perspiration on his brow, and he pushed me in a corner and left me there. I couldn't tell you how long I was there. It was quite some time until someone from the exit area where I was pushed by the garage, was a nurse, Nurse Sullivan was her name that night, became my savior. As she approached me again, she saw me blood on the gurney, coughing, lesions on my face. There had been so much hype on the AIDS epidemic back in the late 80s. She just assumed that I had AIDS. And I convinced this nurse to get me to the ER. And she did begrudgingly, but she did it. And I remember going into room 11. It was cubicle 11, just curtains. And she pushed me in there with my bloody clothes, coughing. She was talking to, at that time, the anesthesiologist and some of the nurses and medical staff on duty. And I remember distinctively, I heard her name being called, Sullivan, you've exposed us to the AIDS virus. What have you done? Anyway, she opens up the curtain and she's having a heated conversation with one of the doctors. And she said, we're nurses, we're doctors. We need to take care of this patient. She opened up the curtain. She grabbed my clothes and she said, you know, I'm going to take these clothes off. And she took some of my clothes off, went back to wherever she was going, I believe, to grab me a gown. She undressed me. She cleaned me. She mopped the floor. And this is important because back during the AIDS epidemic, you know, no one knew how AIDS was transmitted. We didn't know if it was airborne. We didn't know if it was blood transmitted. We knew nothing. All we knew is that people were dying of the AIDS virus. And I was there in the ER, according to them, exposing them. She put me on my side, washed me. She grabbed the gurney with me on it. At this stage of the drama, I'm in and out of consciousness. I remember as we're going into the OR, I could see the doctors and the nurses, the anesthesiologists going into the space of hurry, hurry, hurry. The panic on their faces was intense. I knew at that moment that something grave was going to happen to me. Again, the pain in my abdomen was so severe, bleeding everywhere. I remember the anesthesiologist, as I was put on the operating table, I remember here I am in this gown and how cold the table was. And he flipped me on my side and said, this is going to hurt. And then a matter of seconds, I just went out. At this time, as I'm looking at this medical crew going into medical protocol, Peter Anthony meeting me in spirit form or ethereal form, looking down at Peter Anthony on the operating table in physical form. It was as though everything here was in 3D. Everything around me, I could see. their name tags, the mask on their faces, the clock, the cart table, everything. And I remember looking down, hovering over my physical body, and I could feel as though something had attached itself to my solar plexus, as though I was being pulled. And as I, meaning in the ethereal form, looking down at Peter in physical form, over here, I could see a spinning tunnel. I call it the bullseye. And again, how this works or how it happens, the connection from me in spirit form to the connection to physical form became one, and I'm being pulled into or towards this tunnel. Before me at this tunnel, I began to see people that I recognize from this particular lifetime. I could see my sister who had passed. I could see relatives that had passed, neighbors, even my school teacher, my third grade school teacher. And I could feel this welcome, this surrender, as though they were saying, come on in. This is your new place, your new home. Come with us. There wasn't any logical mind of who are you? What are you doing here? I thought you died. There was no judgment attached to what was going on. There was no illogic. It just felt like I should accept this. And I did gracefully. I remember going in into this tunnel. And as I'm spinning into this tunnel, I think the first thing that I noticed, these mathematical codes to this day as a numerologist, some of these are complex quantum physics. I call them angel codes, the 222, the 333, the 444. The 999, all these codes spinning before me as sound and color around me, color that I can't describe, certainly the sounds I can't describe, the whole combination of sound frequency, like the math frequency, downloading and understanding each code. It's though I was on some level psychically connecting to everything on the planet. My sense of wisdom just expanded beyond consciousness, as though I did a crash course on world history. The mind of Einstein, the mind of Darwin, the mind of your school teachers, the mind of the priest that I had gone to Catholic school, all these, I guess what I refer to as the collective intelligence, was being downloaded into my consciousness from a matter of 0 to 60 and getting it and understanding it. And as I'm going through this tunnel, I'm allowing myself to accept what is going on. Besides seeing the colors, besides seeing the mathematical symbols spinning around me, as I said, I downloaded consciousness. So I began to understand that everything that happens to us on this planet, from the moment that we're born into the moment that we die, it's almost as though every moment of our life is recorded. Every second, every moment, thing matters. Every breath matters. What we do matters. And as I'm going through this tunnel, I began to understand that there is no judgment. There is no black. There is no white. There is no gay. There is no straight. There is no Muslim. There is no Christian. There is only, when you're spinning through this tunnel, there is the essence of spirit. It is a soul energy. And within that soul energy is this thing called love and compassion and kindness. And I am understanding at this time, the sense of peace that I'm experiencing is what really matters. There is no judgment to it. You don't go to a logical state and say, why am I here in this tunnel? And you just accept it. You understand it. I remember when I got into the end of the tunnel, because it wasn't like you go through the tunnel and there's an end of the tunnel. But I ended up in a tree. I think the only tree that I can compare this tree to, and I didn't know at the time until the lecture in 2011 when I went to Los Angeles to lecture for the near death, that this was called the Tree of Life. I didn't know what the Tree of Life was. But here I am sitting in this tree that looks like something out of the Game of Thrones. And my life review began to unfold. And again, going back to the thought of 0 to 60 was recorded. Every moment from the time I was a baby being born, my birthday at 1 year old, 2 years old, learning how to walk, going to school, playing in a park. Every moment was a matrix. And as you're looking at this matrix, again, what you're understanding is you're downloading every moment. You're seeing yourself do things that you shouldn't have done. And so I saw this looking down at myself. And again, Peter, looking at young Peter with no judgment, no opinion, just you could have done better. And these life reviews, these short moments of life, kind of like a slice of Diet Coke or Coca-Cola commercial, just starting again, just a slice of life, watching your life before you and seeing things. I remember not voting. I remember not caring about voting. I remember seeing myself take a gum wrapper and throw it out the window into the river and watching this gum wrapper sweat into the current and how this gum wrapper went to other trash and debris and needles and cat litter and, fast food bags and needles all coming together as one as it's going down the river to the lakes, to the ocean. My one action, my one deed affects everyone. And I learned that, I saw that on the other side, that everything we do on this planet, even when people think we're not watching us or we don't think people are paying attention to what we're doing, these things are being recorded in the matrix, and you begin to realize that. And as my life review continued on, I saw moments that it's not that I was ashamed of or, you know, certainly not proud of. Again, as you're here looking down at Peter, I guess the thing that mattered to me was you could have done better, Peter. And as I experienced each moment, and there's so many different moments, we could spend hours talking about life with you. But as I began to see these moments, it's as though I was clearing out in my conscious or my subconscious these things I call human error that really didn't serve purpose. And as I'm watching this and understanding and accepting and downloading, I remember it's not like I had to forgive myself, but that's kind of how it felt. Is that I would say, you know what, Peter, this is what you did. You own it. You accept it. Don't do it again. And I'm listening to my thoughts as though I'm with headsets on with the other sound, but just hearing the sound before me. And so I remember as I watched this live review with an ascended master next to me, and I have had so many people contact me, oh, that must have been Jesus or it must have been an angel. I can't say to this day that it was Jesus. I can't say that it was an angel. What I can say is that it was some sort of enlightened being that was more advanced than anything on earth I had ever experienced. And again, not questioning who he was because it was a male form, but I just remember the radiant light that was streaming from this physical being. And it's not like I saw myself because I didn't, but I could see this person looking out into the stratosphere of my life review. And you're watching all this. And for me, it was a loving experience. It was a humbling experience. It was an insightful experience. It was awakening experience. And I remember as I left this life review and left the tree, I remember I was in a galaxy of stars and seeing all kinds of fragment around me. And I do remember that before me, it's almost as though I was looking into the sun, but it wasn't the sun. It was just this gold matter. And I began to understand and digest that we are no more than the rock, that we are no more than the trees, we're no more than the cat and the dogs and the dolphin and all these areas on the planet, the grass, the beach, the mountains, the sky, the rivers. We are all connected as one. That was downloaded to my consciousness. You know, we're nothing more than carbon matter. When it's our time to go, we go back to Earth. And I also began to see that we experience lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. This thing called karma is not about a punishing cycle. What you did in this lifetime, you come back and you're punished for it. There was none of that. It's what you didn't do in your last lifetime or lifetimes before. You come back, you get a chance to just do it all over again until you complete. And I think for me, you know, that old saying, karma repeats itself until the lesson is learned. That's what I got. I go into this whole area of looking down at our earth, seeing war and nation. I'm seeing, again, greedy people doing things they shouldn't be doing. I'm seeing leaders all around the world making decisions that basically destroyed mankind. Whether it was the forest, whether it was war, it seemed like the people that were making decisions were doing it in the sake of profit. And it just did not set well for me. And I, for throughout the many years I've talked about this, and so many people criticized me and said, oh, you're talking about spiritual identity, spiritual politics. And that's not what it was all. I wrote this book back in the 90s when none of this was even that relative at the time. And so I remember looking at all this going, it just did not set into this thing called love and compassion. And many of us who've had near-earth experiences know when we go to the sun, know that we had a life review. The only thing that really matters is, you know, where did you shine? Where did you help? Who did you help? Did you donate here? Did you help this old lady at the park, you know, when she fell down? Take care of someone when you needed to? Did you avoid? Did you not speak up? You know, I think this whole thing of shoulda, coulda, and woulda was a part of my understanding. What should I do? Could I have done better? Would I have done better? You know, what matters is that moment, that very moment of where you are, that moment matters. And I really try my very best to be kind to people to this day. There are a lot of people who don't believe in near-earth experiences. There's a lot of people that have criticized me for coming forward with this near-earth experience. And I have to confess to you that, you know, I was very private with this. I came back. I spoke to the doctors and nurses, you know, gleefully, happily about what happened to me. And I learned very quickly that people didn't want to hear any of this. So as I'm looking down at myself and looking down at our planet, I think the reality for me, the moment that really made a difference was that I saw pharmaceutical companies making drugs that benefited their profit lines. And yet these drugs they created or were making for this to cure one disease created three more. And I remember that reality for me was paramount. I think for me, seeing the damages of war and looking down at each country and what we experience all around the planet and seeing, you know, sons going off to war and the hurt that it caused the families. And I mean, the wounds of war, I just ricocheted throughout my consciousness. And so I think, you know, looking down at all this, I remember seeing the pollution on the planet. And, you know, I could see the shores. I could see where we were going in terms of our future. I could see myself no longer stuttering. I could see myself writing books. I could see myself traveling. I could see myself talking about my near-earth experience. And the voice said to me, do you want to go back? And looking at all this, do you want to go back? And I said, yes. And I remember the moment I hit my physical body. The moment I hit my physical body was impact. I can't describe it. It's not that I was going back into the tunnel and back to the operating room, but it's as though I was, you know, floating out of the galaxy from the stars and the planets. And I just remember it happened at light speed, feeling more than seeing, but feeling my soul being sucked down like a vacuum cleaner into my physical body. And the moment I hit my physical body, I could feel the pain. I could feel the surgery in my stomach and also in my anal path. I could smell the drugs. Even though my eyes were closed, I could hear. I remember my own personal doctor told me I had been out for 3.5 weeks. I remember that I went in on November the 11th in operating room 11, in cubicle room number 11, and I died at 11 p.m. And I think they said it was like 1 minute and 11 seconds. So these whole series of 11s for me, when I did come back and after I recouped from the surgery, very difficult, it became my challenge. I was just driven by numerology. I think it was at 3.5 weeks when I regained my consciousness. I remember opening my eyes and the doctors and nurses were there. And I just, you know, here I am, this, you know, I saw God, I saw numbers, I saw the plane, what we're doing. I couldn't stop talking. And I remember the nurses and doctors were looking at me as though I was crazy. And for me, that was like, they could see their eyes become wide, like I was a circus act. But there was a nurse who kind of stood in the background and listened, but she didn't judge. I could hear their opinions. I remember this one nurse said, oh my God, this guy's, he's a nutcase. And this became the struggle of my life. I remember it's like the months I spent in the hospital and the people that stopped showing up, the doctors who wouldn't listen to me. I remember I had to get myself off these medications. I was on morphine, prednisone. All these drugs were causing inexplicable reactions. I lost my eyesight. I couldn't walk. I was down at this time to 85 pounds. I had a staph infection on my face. It was just a horrible time in my life. It was the worst time of my life, and it was the best part of my life. Because what I gained on the other side was insight. What I gained on the other side was this thing called life. And I knew that the outcome of where I was going and what I was to do had purpose. I had a magical ending, though I was in the middle of the war with people not believing. That was the difficult thing. Families to this day don't talk to me. What little bit of family I did have. Friends stopped coming to see me. And I think the most difficult thing was that back in the late 80s and 90s, because I was at 85 pounds, and I think it was months, I think it was 6 months later, I was still hovering at 85 pounds with these round lesions on my face, and everyone just assumed I had AIDS. So people didn't talk to me. So anytime there's a dark period in one's life who's spiritual, you do that thing called you go within. And that's what I did. I began to read. I went into a career, back to a career in the news station that didn't particularly shine. I couldn't talk about this. And it wasn't until someone, when I was getting my haircut, a woman came up to me, and I don't know how she knew, but she said, you died, didn't you? And you came back. What she saw in me was, I think in my life at that time, was a miracle. And it opened me up. And I shared my story, and she shared her story. She went in to have some cosmetic surgery, and she clinically died on the table. And I told her about my procedure, and then I clinically died. We were like two lost souls that found each other at the other ends of the planet. Both of us, completely opposite ends of the spectrum. And so that became my hope. I began to read. I began to study. So I became the student. I studied. I started doing free readings while I was at my job. I got a little double life and began to do all these readings. And people came to me, and it's just here I am, you know, working Monday through Friday, and Saturdays and Sunday, I was booked solid with readings, you know, and I had to start charging because it was taking too much of my time. So I remember charging $25 and they'll go away. And they just kept on and on and on coming and coming. And the next thing you know, I'm approached to go on a series and use numerology as a way to uncover paranormal cases. And the next thing you know, I'm working on traveling around the world as a ghost hunter. One thing led to the next. And I look back at this moment in my life, it's as though what happened to me, predestined, if you will, was meant to happen. Apparently I was on the wrong path. And I can gladly say to this day that me as a numerologist, as a spiritual, I don't want to call it a guru, and certainly astrology, numerology, but certainly an expert in this subject matter for many years. I've used it as a part of my life to help people. I have a lot of people who come to me who are in abusive relationships. I have a lot of people come to me who are in relationships with their family that's rather tormented. And so I have an amazing client base. I am still a paranormal investigator. And all this, looking back at this moment in my life, it's though the worst nightmare of my life became the miracle of my life. It's as though I walked through the darkest shadows of despair and ended up in a rainbow of light and possibility. And I think for your audience is that no matter what you go through, no matter what you experience, no matter how many unhappy experiences you have, whether it's your job, your relationship, your neighbor, not making enough money, what I learned on the other side is to use my thoughts correctly, to keep an open mind. I think as we're going towards an area of so much judgment, you know, right versus left, extreme versus liberal, that doesn't really matter. You know, what matters is, where are you today? How are you showing up today? Where are you showing love? Have you helped this person? Are you being kind? You know, what I learned on the other side is we're given a choice. And the choice for us today is, where am I? What am I doing? And if this is something that's not working out, what do I do? How do I leave this choice? And especially when the choice isn't working out, you just don't quit your job. You basically find something. I always say, love what you do until what you love comes along and it presents itself. And it will always present itself. And sometimes if it doesn't present itself right off the bat, it will present itself. So just keep going. Don't give up. You're talking to someone who lost his eyesight. You're talking to someone who was given 3 months to live. You're listening to someone, I should say, today that I couldn't walk. So I understand social profiling. But I also understand that despite all that we see, despite all that we experience, there is good on this planet. And that person that should be good could be you. So take the moment, just that brief moment, try your very best to be as kind as you can and watch with that one little stone on the glass lake ripple all across the planet. Thank you for listening to my story. I hope this helps.